사랑이 말이에 오랑이 누이에 투이 호네 오파부 투은 그에 타크토네 오테 타여에 아피네 이아 타도 티헤 마우리 오라. This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
Indeed it is, and I will try and fill the gumboots of Mitchell today in speaking on environmental issues. As Effa mentioned, I spoke to Dr. Julia Albrecht of Otago University about the Te Aki Promise. So they are a lecturer and professor in the kind of tourism management department in Otago, and we decided to talk about the Te Aki Promise, which is a kind of a pledge that tourists will make when coming into Aotearoa around their behaviour in regards to the natural environment as well as its surrounds. So I started by asking her to introduce herself as well as introducing the Te Aki Promise to you, the listener.
My name is Julia Albrecht, and I am a senior lecturer and researcher at the University of Otago at the Department of Tourism. And most of my research is on tourism management in the broadest sense, looking at what destinations do in order to manage tourism, but also how communities cope with the tourist influx. And I'm also interested in managing visitors in nature-based tourism especially.
Right. So you have just conducted some new research alongside the kind of social enterprise Good Travel. What was this research about, and what does it show the general population or anyone that reads it about tourism in New Zealand and especially nature tourism?
So my colleague Eliza from, as I say, Good Travel, and I were interested in the destination pledges. So many listeners will have heard about the Te Aki Promise, which is largely a social media campaign run by 7 agencies in New Zealand with the aim of creating awareness and ultimately changing visitor behavior in a destination. But we were also interested in how other countries go about this as well. So we talked to stakeholders in Iceland, where the Icelandic pledge was the first one ever in 2017. We also talked to stakeholders in Hawaii and Palau and Finland. And what does take these very innovative initiatives apart from previous initiatives is the idea of co-creating visitor experiences with the visitors themselves. So we probably all remember how in the past we might have traveled and upon entering, for example, a vulnerable ecologic area, we might have been handed a pamphlet by a guide that says, you shall not do this, you shall not do that. And we know that initiatives like this are not particularly successful because they require the visitor to read and engage with the material and ultimately change their behavior upon instructions that they were giving. And many of us do not respond well to this kind of interaction at the best of times, let alone on holiday. So what the Icelandic pledge did in 2017 and what Te Aki is also doing extremely well is to get the visitor to commit to changing their behavior. So they don't give instructions. They try to get the visitors on board. They say, look, could you please commit to these sorts of things? For example, I shall drive safely. I shall behave responsibly in the natural environment, things like this. And visitors are asked to commit to these behaviors on social media. So they think about it, they engage, and they commit publicly. And this is very innovative in the tourism industry. That hasn't been done before in that sense. But we know from research in other areas, for example, physical education or other behavioral sciences, that if people commit to a goal publicly, they are much more likely to achieve that goal. So this has been proven, for example, for weight loss goals or fitness goals. And I think it's fascinating to look at and find out Whether the same may hold true for responsible behavior in a tourism context, and that's what we did.
Right, so it's essentially creating kind of accountability for yourself and for your own actions via your pledge. Is that kind of correct?
That's essentially the process that participants undergo. And we talk to various stakeholders who set up these pledges. And one of the main motivations was to create awareness for the necessity for changing one's behavior, but also to take people with them and get them on board to committing to changing their behavior. So this is what we're seeing that is happening. And we look forward to follow up future research where we talk to visitors as well to learn about how they perceive these kinds of initiatives and whether they did indeed change their behavior as a result of it.
Right. So you've said that we've seen evidence of this working in other industries, so like weight loss, et cetera, and exercise. And you've noted that there are pledges elsewhere in the world, notably Iceland. Have we seen any results on that kind of the commitment that tourists have made in, say, like the Icelandic context?
So far, what we've got is anecdotal evidence. So we know, for example, that many tourism operators in the countries where there are pledges use those pledges as a conversation starter with visitors. So where in the past they would have to say, oh, by the way, I need you to behave in this particular way, and people might respond slightly negatively because, as we said, they are on holiday, the pledges make for a much more positive conversation starter because now business operators can say, by the way, have you seen this particular pledge? Have you thought about what it means for our activity today? It might be before visiting a glacier in Iceland, say, or before visiting a vulnerable area in Palau or Hawaii, say. So it's something that we know the tourism operators use. And in terms of the numbers of visitors, it's interesting to note that in Iceland, taking the pledge is voluntary, as it is in New Zealand. But in Palau, interestingly, the pledge is conducted differently. It's not on social media. Upon arrival in Palau, you get a stamp put in your passport, and you are signing this stamp in the presence of a government official. So it's a slightly different approach. It has almost a legal characteristic to it because you are signing your commitment into your most important legal travel document. And because it's part of the immigration procedure, every visitor needs to do it.
Yes? Carry on.
No, fine.
I was going to ask, so you noted that in Iceland and Aotearoa, it's a voluntary thing to make this pledge on social media. Was there a reason that when the Tiaki Promise or the pledge was set up, it was set up in this way as opposed to the model that is in Palau?
Well, the tourism industry and the visitor numbers in Palau are a lot smaller than in Aotearoa, so it would be a major, major initiative to do it in the same way and get people to have a stamp put in their passport. So I think the logistics are not really comparable simply because of the visitor numbers.
Right. Do you think it's something that perhaps the New Zealand tourism industry should look towards, perhaps, once a logistical model is set up for being able to process all these kind of papers?
I think first we would need to look at two things, and that's A, the success of the way Palau is doing it. So we would need to look at whether this way of doing it works in Palau in the coming years. If we see positive outcomes, we might compare with outcomes of the Tiaki Promise as it is run now. And I think based on this information, we can then start considering whether a similar model might work in New Zealand. But with the pledges in general, it's still early days, and we need to see to what extent they work and how, and also what particular markets they work for. So if we look at how the pledges are run, mostly social media in Iceland and New Zealand, for example, This is very much targeted towards free independent travelers. This is not something that our group travelers and the coach tour travelers will necessarily take into consideration, because they have limited opportunity to select the kinds of activities they engage in during their trip. So at the moment, it's mostly for free independent travelers anyway.
Right. And speaking of areas that it affects, towards the start of the interview, you mentioned that you're particularly concerned in kind of the preservation of natural tourism, etc. Recently in the news across the ditch in Australia, we've seen the closing of Uluru as a kind of tourist destination in terms of being able to climb and walk on it on an ecological level. With the Te Aki promise and the pledges across the world, are they pledges to be exclusively mindful of ecological sites, or will they kind of implement a similar promise to be respectful and mindful of sites of indigenous importance as well, like somewhere like Uluru?
That's an excellent point. And earlier in the interview, when I talked about environmental responsibility, I was merely using that as an example. Even with the Te Aki promise as it exists now, there is a very significant emphasis on indigenous and cultural tourism in New Zealand as well. So New Zealand Maori tourism had very significant input into the preparation and implementation of the pledge, and it's already something that has been considered important throughout the whole process. The same holds true for the Pono Pledge, which is the Hawaiian one. There has also been significant input from indigenous peoples as well. So this is very much comparable to how things have been done in New Zealand. So it is very important already. This is not something that is going to be included in the pledges in the future. That is already happening.
Right, that's a great thing to hear. You've said that there have been, and reading about it, there are several key organizations involved already. How do you judge their commitment to, as to whether it's a purely commercial benefit for them to join in versus a kind of pure commitment to furthering an ecological or restorative message in New Zealand tourism?
Well, the agencies and organizations that were involved in the Te Aki promise were Tourism New Zealand, Air New Zealand, the Department of Conservation, the Tourism Industry Aotearoa, Industry Representational Body, New Zealand Maori Tourism, Local Government NZ, and Tourism Holdings. So if you just look at this list of organizations, you see that there are government bodies, you see that there's industry representation, but there's also very clearly specific tourism representation as well. So this shows us that there was a deliberate effort to have something that works not only from a business context, not only from a policymaker context, and also something that works across both mainstream and cultural tourism as well. So I think there are business interests, simply because it is New Zealand's largest industry, and their business interests need to be represented. But I think the efforts to involve environmental and cultural interests are very much evident, and that is a good thing. And some interviewees in our research have told us that this is probably the broadest participation in any tourism-related initiative or project that they have recently seen.
Wow.
So everyone in the interviews agreed that this was exemplary in terms of implementing this process in New Zealand tourism.
Certainly. So one last question is, I mean, as you mentioned, it's still in its kind of embryonic phases, but where would you like to see this promise go next, or how do you see this promise being taken into the future?
I think we need to look at how the Te Aki promise, alongside other pledges, are being taken up by visitors. And we currently see that take-up is not as quick as some might have hoped. So I think next we need to look at how to make these initiatives even more visible. So at the moment we've got the videos on international planes. We've got some visibility at the airport. There's obviously visibility online. But I think we need to find ways to make this even more present in the visitors' minds so that they can make a deliberate decision whether or not to pledge. So I think that's one thing we need to look into. Of course, in a perfect world, you would want the number of visitors who choose to behave responsibly to increase. And eventually, in a perfect world, we wouldn't need the pledges anymore. And responsible travel would become mainstream and just the way tourism is done in New Zealand. But obviously, we are quite a long way from that.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihei Moriora.